Hello, and welcome to the Cash News Podcast, informative conversations about all things currency and cash. We'll share insights on the issues affecting the world of cash today, like cash security, payments technology, and the cash supply chain. Your hosts, Tom Meehan and Sean Ferrari, hope to inform industry professionals and support better cash security and management by sharing the latest information on trends, strategies, and technology. This is the Cash News Podcast. Now, here's Tom and Sean.
All right, we're back. Another episode of the Cash News Podcast. I don't know what episode number it is. I'm guessing somewhere in the 60s. Sean, how are you?
I'm good. Been a little while. How are you doing?
Good, man. Good.
Welcome to an early spring here. Starting to get a little warm, at least for now.
Yeah. The weather's been interesting, and I feel like it was freezing. Then we got all that rain, and then now yesterday I think it was like 70. So it goes from like 25 to 70, back and forth. But definitely interesting. So what have you been up to? I mean, let's give the quick 5-minute rundown. Where have you been? What exciting
what
stuff
have you been doing? Yeah, no, it's been an interesting couple weeks. Past few weeks, been doing some traveling out and about. I was here in DC at a conference a couple weeks ago, the BAFT conference, actually, which Finance and Trade, kind of an American Bankers Association affiliated conference, was really, really interesting. Had a lot of perspectives on what's going on. I've spent my time on the finance track. I didn't really go into their trade track that much, just based on what we do here at Currency Research. But there's a lot of talk on real-time payments, how that's kind of rolling out in the U.S. with FedNow and the Clearinghouse kind of doing their work there on their systems. We can get into that a little bit if we want, but we talked a bit about that, and then also how new technologies are contributing to that space and how folks are using things like AI in the financial sector. So that was an interesting conference. A lot of good discussion, a lot of good content. And then last week I was over in London at another event that was really, again, kind of focused on the payment system in banking in the Eurozone. And it was really looking at, again, also kind of a real-time payments theme for part of it. And then quite a bit on digital currencies, central bank digital currencies, and again, AI and how that's kind of shaping the financial thing. And it was kind of cool while I was there. Also went to a kind of fintech innovation evening, which was fun, where they had a couple folks. It was focused on AI, and they had some folks kind of pitching to some investors their AI concepts. So that was a fun night. So that's what I've been kind of up to, kind of learning and putting that together while it's helping us kind of get some ideas for our payments and digital currency and AI events later this year in September. So it's been good. How about you? Where you been?
I have been all over the place. So a couple, what I would say more, I resist saying conferences, even though they're conference-like, you know, 150 people in the meetings. One around a little bit different. So at the University of Florida, there was Innovate. They call it Innovate and Ignite. So it's a two-day event where one is kind of setting up the year for what are some of the challenges retailers are facing around loss. There was talk about cash there because there were a lot of C-store and dollar stores that still do a very large percentage of their revenue in cash, more than 60% in most of those cases. So talking about kind of the implications around storing cash, how to move it. And then the next day, which off of the left for us, was an active threat event. So they actually did a tabletop where they did an active threat assailant event at the University of Florida and kind of walked through what happens and had people talking. So it was a really interesting event. Yesterday, I actually was in New York City for, again, more of a town hall event, just kind of talking about what's going on in retail. Spent a little bit of time, although it's wild to say, in Europe, around some more tamper-proof and packaging things. And then really gearing up towards for me, the spring season is really busy with events. So obviously, I'll be with you in Fort Worth, and then we have the Retail Leaders Association, and then, you know, a whole host of security and risk conferences actually jam-packed together, as a matter of fact. In April, there are two conferences every single week, so you have to pick and choose, like, how do you manage even what you go to? Some of the themes that I think you mentioned it that we're hearing pretty consistently here on my side is I haven't been anywhere there's not a pretty steady talk about AI and what the implications are, good, bad, and indifferent. Also, a lot on I'm sure you've seen a lot with the real-time payments. There was even in the retail space a lot of chatter on what, if anything, that means to them. Again, that misunderstanding of what it really means. But the fact that people are talking about it is important. And then I think at least most recently, there was much more chatter around crypto. You know, it's in the news again. It was at its all-time high again, Bitcoin anyway, and then kind of some of the things that go around there. So a lot of activity, lots of travel. I think it's just going to get busier. And then usually there's a lull in the summer, and then we start up in the fall. So I know we'll do some live taping in May at Fort Worth. So I'm looking forward to that. And then what's on your mind? What are some current events or things that you'd want to talk about or things?
I think maybe picking up on your comment on traveling about, I know we were just chatting and you were traveling a couple weeks ago when there was that AT&T glitch on the network, and it's always interesting to kind of see what happens when that sort of stuff happens, because it is always a flashpoint to say, hey, cash is still important. Yeah. But you were out in the middle of it.
It was pretty wild, actually. So I carry a couple of different devices pretty much everywhere I go, just by design because of the job. And I was really early in the morning. I left my house at 3:45 in the morning to catch a really early flight. And on my way to the airport, I noticed that I had no service. And it wasn't the typical no service. I don't know how to describe it. Like, it wasn't like you didn't have a lot of bars. It was like there was nothing. It was dead. And I am kind of I travel so much that I kind of have everything situated. So I was more aggravated that I couldn't communicate before I got on the plane. I get to the airport, and at that point, not a lot of people really knew what was going on, for lack of better words. It wasn't on the news. I immediately, you know, started to look and say, hey, this is odd to not have anything anywhere. And while I was online at Clear, there were, I don't know, 15 or 20 people, and they're all going, hey, my phone's not working. Is your phone not working? And so at that point, I, you know, got on the Wi-Fi and started researching, and there was nothing except for on Twitter. There was no mention in news, no mentioning, but Twitter, there were people all over the United States talking about it. And when I got through and to the other side, it was just kind of the people walking around. There really wasn't, really didn't have the impact. We took off. While I was on the plane, I had internet, and while I was in the air, there were a couple news agencies reporting that this was a major outage. And when I landed in O'Hara, kind of hard to even explain it. I was explaining to you, there were people aimlessly walking around. And I actually bumped into a gentleman who I would say was older than me, who said, well, I have no cash. I don't have any credit cards with me. So I use my phone for everything. I don't know how to, basically he didn't know what to do. And I saw him take a cab, and he's like, oh, well, you know, I don't carry credit cards. I don't like credit cards. I just use Apple Pay with my debit card, and that's it. But what it was interesting was the importance of not only having a backup plan of that when things don't work, it always goes back to paper money, you know, and there were ATMs in the O'Hara, and I was only in one terminal, so I keep in mind I can't speak of all, but there was a long line, and it reminded me of when we were in Mexico City, like some of the pictures of people waiting in this ATM and swearing because there was no more money left in it, probably because O'Hara is a pretty busy airport and everybody went and got cash to go get a cab, and then took, you know, the machine that probably doesn't get used that much ran out. And It reminds me of what we say all the time, is that when there is an event, and this is not a self-fulfilling prophecy for you and I, that's because we are in the cash business. Every time there's an event that happens in any country, people go back to money. They go back to the cash. And then so when we saw it in COVID, we saw it when SWIFT went down in Canada, we saw it in a lot of LTAM countries. There's a lot fewer there because they're so heavily used cash. But this was like a great example of, hey, even having 20 or 30 bucks on you makes a big difference when nothing else works. It also is like serves a good example as if you're not a frequent traveler, that, hey, you can still get a paper boarding pass. You know, you can still save your boarding pass on, you know, you save your boarding pass on your phone. Because in this event, what occurred is what really will occur, that so Verizon was still working in most markets, T-Mobile was still working. So what you saw was a large percentage of people that didn't have access, but then you also saw what happens when everybody tries to jump on Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi doesn't work. And so you had this kind of domino effect, but it was a little bit eerie in the sense of like, you had folks like walking around, looking at their phone, like just going like, huh, I can't connect. And so it was wild to me to see how heavily, although we know this, how heavily we're invested and how dependent, hyper-dependent we are on this little device. And if it doesn't work, I'm screwed. Like I have no means to do anything. And it was also just a stark reminder of the cash. And I said to this guy, I said, hey, I always carry some cash. I'm not a big cash user. Like we talk about this all the time, but I'll always have some cash on me because I guess, cause I see the technology fail. And this was more catastrophic in the sense that, you know, they lost a network that in theory should not be able to be lost in that scale. And AT&T is the largest cell provider in the world. I don't think people realize that. I know there's a lot of commercials and things, but per person, they are the largest. So, and the numbers were all over the place. Who knows what the real numbers were? So, you know, I heard numbers as high as 240 million people without service and as low as 80 million. Well, 80 million is a lot of people. Like when I said the low, like when I saw the low, I'm like, that's still a massive amount of people. And, you know, the carrier folks that I know were like, well, we didn't go down. And I'm like, yeah, but if you did, you'd be in the same boat. But again, you and I talked about this when SWIFT went down, and it is, we're heavily dependent on technology. There is a point to have, you know, some cash with you and a backup supply. That doesn't mean that, you know, I expect people to have a suitcase full of money in case they get stuck somewhere. But, you know, having 20 or 30 or even $100 in cash, that gentleman who I ran into was walking aimlessly when I went down to the cab stand and would have zero stress. He would have gotten the cab and he would have said, hey, take me to here. And he would have paid that person and he would have went on his way. And this was, I'll finish out with this. 2 days before that event happened, the director of the FBI came out and said that, you know, whether you believe it, whether it's true, doesn't matter, that, you know, the United States is being attacked, infrastructure is being attacked, utility, telecom is being attacked very, very heavily, and that there would be a major event. Now, turns out AT&T's, you know, official statement was that there was a software update that had an issue and caused a catastrophic outage. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't really matter what you think. The point is that that warning 2 days before should allow all of us to be kind of prepared. Depending on what you do for a living, you know, and it depends on where you'll be. So I immediately, literally the next day, went out and got a Verizon phone so that I had two options, because I, in my role, I can't be out of contact. Like it could create an issue for me from a business perspective. So not everybody needs to do that, but that was the thing where I said, here I am talking about the backup plan. I have all this stuff in my bag. I've got extra to this hotspot in case my phone breaks. And I'm like, yeah, but it's all AT&T. So now everything I had didn't work. And I did have cash. And I happened to be with someone that had internet. But I also had a boarding pass saved on my phone. I also knew exactly where I was going. I also, knew where the cabs were in O'Hare and was like, yeah, Uber is more convenient, but I could walk downstairs. Like, it's not that stressful. And I think you and I say this all the time. It isn't, at least in our lifetime, going away. And it's, you know, it's funny because our next topic I think we're talking about is crypto. And it's like, hey, go ahead and try to use crypto to pay for something, even when the internet's working, and good luck. Like, so, like, all of the new thing, this isn't a new or old solution thing. This is just a, hey, in that situation, the note is going to win every single time. The greenback's going to, everybody accepts it. Everybody understands it. And I would argue in that scenario, you're going to get favoritism when you have paper money.
No, those are all good points. And I think you're right. We say it all the time that all these payment systems that we talk about are dependent on technology, and to some degree, even cash, right? I mean, if depending on the network that ATM is operating on, and it might not be able to communicate. But at least if you have it on your person, as you can with cash in a lot of cases, then yeah, you can at least get by for a little bit until you find something that's working, and get by. So I think, we see that stuff all the time, and it was interesting, my own kind of personal experience around not that outage, but every year I do Girl Scout cookie sales with my daughter, and I'm standing there at cookie booths right outside of stores, and it's always interesting to me to see how people pay, just because of how we're in. And it does surprise me to some degree that like 90% of people have some cash on them. They come by and they take a 20 out, take a 5 out, whatever it is, they have a little bit of cash and buy a couple boxes of cookies. But then there's that 10% or so that want to pay with electronic payments. And then it always surprises me because Girl Scouts is, I won't get into Girl Scouts, but they're not exactly the most tech forward group of, I mean, it's a charity. There's a lot of kids, what's that? Yeah, exactly. But they have some online platforms where you can buy cookies. So this year, I usually offer like, okay, well, you can Venmo me, whatever. We'll sell it up later. That's fine. Just here's how to do it. So I kind of give people the option of like, this year there's a new option of credit card payment. I was like, okay. So would offer people, yes, yeah, sure, we take electronic payments. We can do credit card. You can Venmo me, Zelle me, whatever you want to do. Okay. Well, surprisingly to me, a lot of people opted for the credit card payment. And I say surprising, not from a stance that it's been around longest and more people probably have that. But in order to take this credit card payment, and I would tell them, I was like, it's going to take a little while. I literally have to take the credit card from them, log into a platform, and basically fill out an online order form. So I'm like, okay, let me type in your credit. This is on my phone. Let me type in your credit card information. Yep. I'm going to type in your credit card information. I'm going to type in the PIN on the back. I'm going to type in your, oh, can I have your zip code? Yep. Thanks. I'm going to type in your zip code. I'm going to type in your name, and then make the transaction. Well, that's great. But now, I mean, we all use iPhones or phones, right? Of course, all that information is now stored on my freaking phone. So now I have like 20 people's information that I have to go clean out because I'm a good person and delete it and remove it and get rid of it. But there was zero concern about it from anybody, like zero concern. Just like, yeah, sure, here you go. I'm like, you sure you don't want to just Venmo with me? Because then I don't have any of your information. I have like none. It just shows up and... But it just, I mean, it just surprised me it was more from the lack of concern that people had about giving me all that information. And maybe it's because I'm standing at a Girl Scout booth and whatever, but I don't know. It was just odd to me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think, it's wild to me when you have to fill all the forms out. So like, it reminds me of like the flea market type. The person takes their hand key, your card into their phone because their little square reader is not reading. And I'm like, huh, or taking a picture of my credit card. That's my favorite. And I mean, I guess the credit card companies, the zero liability on the customer side is why, probably.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. It's a fair point. I mean, there's a lot of protections in place should something happen.
Still odd to me, though. The convenience factor, though, like speed for me is, I guess, I don't know why it's not for everybody. Like fast speed for me is always the driver. Like if it's going to take more than, you know, 15 minutes to do anything, I don't want to do it anymore. Nothing. And so I'm always always curious to that. It's funny. I didn't know the Girl Scouts went to credit cards. I do know that the Girl Scouts, you know, it's $1 billion this year in cookies because I talked about it with someone else, and it's like a big business for them. It's pretty wild, actually.
It is. Yeah. No, it's quite the thing.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. But anyway, cookie season is officially over. It ended 2 days ago here, anyway. So I have closed the books. I have settled all the accounts, turned in all the cash.
Do they win stuff if they sell more? Like, is it still incentivized that way?
There's a whole thing there. You can your girls can opt in or out of rewards, and if you opt out, then you get more money for your troop. So they get about $1 out of every box.
Yeah,
that they sell goes to their troop. So $4 goes to various production and other girls.
Yeah, advertising and
And then they get $1. So it's good. I mean, it pays for some trips they do and, you know, activities. You know, people. Awesome. It's one of those rare things that you don't have to actually, like, you know, market and make a strong sales pitch for. You just kind of set up a booth and it's like
everybody kind of knows.
Here it is.
Yeah, everybody kind of knows. And at this stage of the game, in my opinion, they're almost like, "Hey, I expect it." Right.
Yeah, exactly.
But like,
I'm looking for my Girl Scout cookies this year.
Where can I get them? And it is a thing. Like, people are no joke with it, for sure. They're serious about it, for damn sure. So like, I see that. I know that every time I don't eat Girl Scout cookies because they're, you know, because of the sugar side of it. But like, every time it happens, there are several boxes because there's this like feeling of like, well, you have to buy them, right? Not from everybody we know, though.
Right.
But yeah, no, actually, there's some on my counter right now. That's how I know the season is there. So it's a pretty good one. What about crypto? What are your thoughts, man?
Yeah.
Bitcoin's
Girl Scouts don't take crypto. No crypto for Girl Scouts. That doesn't.
Not yet. That's next.
That's next. Yeah, exactly. No, I think, you know, it's interesting in the crypto space. I think we're getting to the point. We're starting to get to the point where I think, at least, and I'm going to talk about more of the mainstream, like if you wanted to transact with a digital currency, like USDC or something like that, that you might have a shot at doing it, not the fringe crypto stuff here that you're just going to invest in. But I think we're starting to get to the point where folks are thinking about more how do these types of digital currencies interact with each other, or how can you actually construct a wallet where you can at least interact through a PayPal or Venmo who's starting to accept these types of payments, that there are ways to actually do things with them. And it's going to start, I think, to narrow the field a little bit to the top handful of transactable digital currencies, if you will. That's not to say they're any safer now. With some additional regulation, maybe they're getting there, but they're not necessarily safer now than they were before. But they're at least, I think, starting to think about actual like use cases and how, as a consumer, could I do something meaningful with these rather than just have it and maybe spend it in one place. So I think the PayPal type stuff where you can actually transact in a digital currency is meaningful. If that catches on, then there is something there. But again, it has a long way to go from being just like a closed loop system where, I transact with my friends in it, but that's about it. I do think, and what some of these conferences we're talking about is deposit tokens at commercial banks are probably going to fill an internal need. And I think some of these wallet concepts using some stablecoin and that sort of stuff could easily facilitate transacting deposit tokens between institutions, which now you're starting to talk about some meaningful large financial institutions allowing customers at some point maybe to move funds between financial institutions using a token, which would actually alleviate a lot of the strife people have and complaints people have now about, hey, I just want to move money from JP Morgan to Citi and it takes a week.
Yep.
Why is that?
Yeah. Or you have to, like, I don't know, one of my banks, if I give them $3, I do an instant transfer. I'm like, why do I have to give you $3?
Right.
Like, why? And, you know, it's pretty weird because I'm going like, so it'll take 3 days if I don't give you $3, but it's instant if I give you $3. And it's so, and I'm always in the back of my mind going like, all right, how are they settling that behind the scenes? Are they, you know, like, is it even really instant, or are they just taking one from another type of thing? But yeah, I'm really interested in the tokenization side of it. Again, I think that creates confusion of CDBC versus real-time payments versus, like, because they're not the same.
No,
they're not all the same, and they have different pros and cons. I would argue that we should be doing tokenized real-time transfer. There's no reason not to. It's actually would make sense from a security standpoint, from a management standpoint. So, and real-time payments is, you know, I think FedNow is not a new concept. It's just FedNow is new. Like, the real-time payment piece is not a new thing. It's just, it's how it's going to be adopted and whether who you're going to use to do it. And, you know, I think it's the evolution. I think the Bitcoin piece or the crypto piece is just a whole nother layer of complexity. I don't even know if this is real. So I'll tense this with, like, Donald Trump saying, I saw where the Donald Trump said CBDC, if he becomes president, would never happen. I don't even know if that's accurate or not. I didn't take the time to look. But my point is, like, that's feeding a narrative that doesn't even make sense, because at the end of the day, it's just a way to move something digitally. And if you are a truly against the government being able to see what you do with your money, then you have to use cash. You have to use cash. And Bitcoin has been proven multiple times. I mean, literally, and I'm going to talk about this later on today in a different podcast, is we know that, I can't think of the name of the healthcare provider, but the healthcare provider that does insurance and billing paid $22 million in ransomware 2 weeks ago because they see it on a ledger. So, it's still anonymous. I'm like, sure, until you start to watch it and track to where it goes, because eventually it doesn't. And in the Colonial Pipeline, the FBI was able to seize that money, same thing, because there was a ledger that goes, hey, this is what it is. So, the only truly anonymous way to transfer money today is in paper. And I'll argue that till the end of Earth, that sure, Bitcoin or crypto is less, it's de-identified for sure. But I gather that people don't realize that using their debit card and their credit card, so I would argue with those people that are against CBDC is, do you not use a debit card? Do you not use crypto? Do you not use Venmo, Zelle, Cash App, or any of those things? Because if you say no to all of them, then you are probably less than 1% of the population. Like, the reality is, how many people, I don't know anybody, Sean, in my sphere of friends that don't use any form of electronic payment and only use cash. I don't even know anybody that would say a large percentage of their business. Even in the cannabis world, where they're required to, all they do is say, like, I wish I could do this differently. So it's a weird quasi scenario of, like, I still, my biggest concern and why I think we should do more podcasts about this is that people lump digital together. and don't understand that crypto is completely different than CDBC, completely different than real estate. And there could be crossover in every single one of them, but they're not the same. Just like when you, Venmo is not a bank, right? Zelle is not a bank. I think PayPal might be a bank. I think PayPal might be FDIC, but I'm not sure. I think they have a saving.
Yeah, PayPal is a bank. And Zelle operates.
Through banks. They're connectors.
Banks
they're
connectors.
Yeah, they're connectors.
Zelle doesn't actually hold anybody. It's just
But you know, so when someone's using Cash App or Zelle, they don't have the same protections that when they're using a bank. And that's not good or bad. It's just understanding what it is. I think Venmo, although it's regulated, is still under the same kind of constraints of they're not a bank. And then my favorite example is we load $20 a week onto Starbucks. And they're, you know, that money is not protected. That money is, they're gaining interest rates. So like, there's so many things that we as people do. And then my favorite argument of all is like, do you use TikTok? You're afraid of CDBC. And you've given away the, you know, you literally have told people like, oh, you can have everything on my phone. So it's a tough one. And the news media, I would argue, doesn't always get it right. And I'm not sure it's their fault. Because sometimes I'm with you and someone says something and I'm like, huh, that person's definitely smarter than me and knows more about this. But what they said is definitely not what FedDallas.
No, there's a lot of misinformation out there. And I think that's where, you know, to some degree, the public at large shouldn't ever really be expected to understand any of this. Why do they care? They just want to make a payment from point A to point B. And I think that's where it does get complicated, because to your point, it's like, oh, I can do this instantly. And if I do that, that's going to cost a fee. Or I don't care and it's going to take 5 days to get there. And it'll be free. And I think that's kind of the world we're going to kind of see, where there's going to be this kind of like a FedEx shipping type option, right? Where it's like, oh, I want to do this. I want to move my money from me to Tom, or I want to pay my bill. Okay, cool. Here's your three options. It's free and it gets there now. It's costs $5, but it goes now. It's free and it gets there in 3 days, whatever. And you just kind of click it, and then what happens in the back end, whether that's a token that's moving, like, I have to do some extra things for that, but whether it's a token that's moving or a real-time payment that's moving or a regular ACH that's going, you don't know. You don't care, nor do you care.
And you shouldn't. I mean, I think my analogy always with privacy is that it's usually the conversation with CDC is usually driven by a group or a subset of people, because if you have a car that you've purchased in the last 2 years, the last 5 years even, there's a high likelihood that there's a black box in it, just like on a plane. And there's a high likelihood that it's a connected black box that, you know, I always laugh like, hey, you ever get that message about you need an oil change in your email? Yeah, if people really truly step back and understood how connected we are and how much information people have, you would probably be less concerned with things around government control on CDBCs. When what CDBC will take replace or not replace but enhance already exists today, and there's no way to do it anonymously. You can't transfer money from bank to bank anonymously. There's no way to do ACH without someone knowing. And I guess this is the Tom Meehan statement that always frustrates people. Why do you care how the cake is baked? Because you just want it to taste good and be fresh. And it's kind of exactly what you said. I'm a firm believer people should understand what happens with their information. But we are in this hypersensitive world where there are a lot of misconceptions of what these things mean. And look, you and I say it all the time. I think there's a place for crypto. I think there's a place for all of these things. Do I think the one is better than the other? Yeah, probably in some cases, but it's also depending on who you are, where you are in your journey, where you are in your financial situation. But certainly, you would know this better. I mean, the real-time payments rails that are being used today, that's not a new process. SWIFT is not new. Like, ACH is certainly not new. So, like, it's kind of time to take advantage of some of the technology that's out there. And tokenization, the way the encryption works, is a hell of a lot safer than ACH or SWIFT.
When you get into the cool stuff, I mean, there's so much cool stuff tokenization can do, and your point about the security around it can be really good. And when you start combining it with Web3 and other type tokens you can have, even the identity protection, to your point, could be far superior than what it is, it is now.
Not an early indication of something going wrong. You can almost in real time identify there's a problem, where today we're going to, that wire, because of that amount, we're going to hold it for 3 days because there's no way to tell if it's fraud. And for some reason, you know, if we hold it for 3 days, that'll help it. The reason that went into place is so that if someone did a fraudulent wire on a Friday morning, that a big company would catch it. But like, so that's, you're putting in safeguards that we created in the 90s to try to keep up with what's going on today. And, you know, my favorite is the encryption standards. I'm looking this up because I don't know off the top of my head right now. I just want to know because this is what I'm thinking. I'm thinking I'm right, but I want to check. but the banking, I'm pretty sure the banking standard for encryption is pretty much at its life end anyway with the where we're at AI. So like, some of this stuff should happen, needs to happen. And I think arguably the crypto side has caused confusion in things that, you know, would have needed to occur anyway.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think there's just so much richness there. And that was the other piece some of these conferences talked about was, you know, and we can get into it on a future discussion, but there's so much data out there now, whether it's about us or about the transactions or other things that, you know, learning and sharing, figuring out how to do the most with this data. And not that data is the new gold or whatever is any groundbreaking statement. It's been said for years now, tens of years, decades, it's been said. But it seems with AI and other technologies now that we might actually be able to understand this data better than we have in the past and do things. So,
yep. Anyway. Yeah. So I was at, so yeah, your AES encryption, that's what I thought, is, you know, 21 years old. We need tokenization. We need some of these things to protect us. And the scariest thing of all is with AI today, in the very near future, a lot of the safeguards we have in place will become obsolete. So some of this is a necessity. And, you know, I appreciate that you and Currency Research are trying to educate people on kind of, hey, this is what it is, and it's not what you think. And, you know, I'll leave my last comment of it. When we were in Orlando last year, gosh, I can't remember his name. He was one of the beer nerds.
Peter, one of the Peters, probably.
Yeah. And he had a, not the big guy. He was talking about real time payments and how he was very involved. And then he had $400 in cash on him. And I'm like, hey, why do you carry all that cash? And he's like, well, I like to tip people. And he's like, I feel like, and I'm like, it's like, whoa, like I was kind of floored by, and you know, I really appreciate he said what you and I always say is like, whoa, like I would, and we don't say this. He said, I would love for cash to be dead, but it's like, okay, well, why don't you change the narrative to like what it is? And he did. I give him credit. He went up on stage and said he had cash with him. Like, he did it. But like, it's this, all of these things, there's a place for the evolution, and I don't think one is dead or alive. I think it's time to change, and we're in a good spot. So Any final parting words for everybody?
No, nothing. I think a good discussion got off to, I don't know where my next, actually, I think my next work-related travel is probably down to Fort Worth. Well, that seems like it's too far in advance. I'm sure a couple trips will pop in between now and then. But nonetheless, looking forward to more discussions with you. We'll get some guests on here, soon. And share that with folks. But yeah, no, good to see it as always.
Good to see you. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Cash News Podcast. We hope you found this episode insightful. Don't forget to like and review us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter, and be sure to visit us at thecashnews.com to stay up to date with the latest on the world of cash. Thanks again for listening to the Cash News Podcast.